Today, we're going to zone in on speech and ways that speech can create and ways that speech can destroy. So words, how our words can create and destroy. And before we jump in to look at these sources, I know we kind of talk about the power of speech all the time, but I want you to kind of think of a moment in your own life where you really perceived the creative power of speech, right? How speech could create some sort of reality beyond just the words themselves. Okay, this is going to be a bit of a Hasidic. We're going to continue the Hasidic pathway in terms of our genre. So we're going to start with this verse from the book of Proverbs, Mishle. Mavet v'chaim biyad lashon. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And this phrase really takes on a life of its own in many ways in its reception history. And I want to look here first at the way Kabbalah understands the power of speech to really generate life and to generate our world. And in some ways, this relates to what you saw in the first session, the piece you saw in the Ramban about the letters that are in the Torah. But this goes in a little bit of a different direction. So we have in Sefer Yetzirah, right, that foundational Kabbalistic work, which I am not going to pretend to understand, but it's going to be our jumping off point, says, the foundations are the 22 letters. The foundations of what exactly, we didn't know, but it seems like of our world are 22 letters, right? And God has, we have all these different verbs, formed, weighed, transmuted, composed, and created with these 22 letters, every living being and every soul yet uncreated. Okay, so in my past life, I did chemistry. I was going to pursue chemistry more fully and instead became a rabbi. But in some ways, you can think of this as like the 22 letters are the basic molecular components, not just of all words, but of all life. Everything that's created actually stems from the 22 letters of the Aleph Bet. Okay. And he says, sort of gets into how this relates to God's name. It's a little bit confusing, but this is the piece I want to grab. God formed substance from the void, yatzar mi tohu mamash, and nothingness into something, and sort of formed the pillars of our world, but ultimately out of the 22 letters. Okay, so that's sort of the power of divine speech, which we might not understand fully. I don't pretend to. It seems very mysterious. But I think you could ask, does this have anything to do with our own speech? Other than that, like, the Hebrew language shares an alphabet with this kind of divine letters of creation. But you might say, like, okay, God's speech has the power to create. But does that necessarily mean that human speech is as powerful? So we're going to take this first in a, again, kind of Kabbalistic direction. I'm going to scroll down here to page 2. There's kind of a split in the world of Kabbalah, in Jewish mysticism. There's Nachmanides, the Ramban, and what are called theosophic Kabbalists that are mostly about kind of somehow gazing at the cosmos and the divine world and trying to glean understanding from that. There's another branch of Jewish mysticism that is called ecstatic Kabbalah, where we actually are kind of trying to participate in the spiritual world fully. And in some ways, the goal of it is not just to kind of gaze upon the divine cosmos however we can, but to kind of have ecstatic union, okay? So it's a little bit far out, but one of the proponents of this branch of Kabbalah is Ibrahim Abulafia, the 13th century in Spain. And I just wanted to give you a taste of what he offers here. One of the things that this branch of Kabbalah would do is participate in a kind of mantras, or different permutations combining different letters that were meant to unlock the spiritual creative power of the letters. Okay, so he describes how those who are engaged in these Kabbalistic recitations of the divine names and different combinations of letters, they ascend me'or le'or, from light to light until they achieve union. Ad shuv dibram hapnimi davuk el dibur shehume ein kol dibur. And until their inner speech, their inner human speech, returns to its ultimate source, right? Cleaving to the primordial speech, divine speech, which is the source of all speech. Okay, so it's like a little bit trippy, but the idea is like there's some exercise that we could do that would build our awareness of the fact that our own speech kind of all goes back to that first moment of Bereshit where God speaks the world into existence. Okay, and then he goes on to describe, they further ascend from speech to speech until the inner human speech is a power in itself. Dibur ha'enoshi ha'pnimi, koach be'atzmo. And then he describes that sort of leading to almost a state of prophecy, preparation to receive the divine speech. Okay, again, I'm not pretending to fully understand this, but we have this idea that Kabbalah brings us to, which is not only about the power of God's speech, sort of the letters that constitute the Torah, but that our own speech could draw from and participate in that power. I want to now kind of swing the pendulum to like, okay, this is like this beautiful, lofty idea. Maybe you can do it if you're a Kabbalist sitting by yourself reciting letters, have some sense of the spiritual power of your speech. But actually, quite often, the power of our words is much more destructive than it is creative. So we're going to look at this angle, right? Words gone wrong, the plague of damaging speech. And what I want to bring us to here is the way that the rabbis understand the plague of leprosy, tzara'at, which is probably not exactly leprosy, but in any case, the skin disease, tzara'at, as being a kind of punishment for lashon hara, for destructive speech. So you see here the Torah's instruction for a person who's gotten the skin disease of tzara'at, how do they cleanse themselves? You'll notice that one of the things they do is that they have to bring two birds, two live clean birds, along with different kinds of wood and branches. Shtei tziporim chayot tehorot. Two birds are part of the cleansing purification process from tzara'at. And on this, Rashi says, Lefi shehanegaim ba'in al lashon hara shehu ma'aseh pit putei devarim. Since the skin afflictions come because of lashon hara, which is a matter of chattering speech, the idea is that a person chattered too much, and their speech was thus destructive. Lefichach huzkaku lataharato tziporim shemepat petin tamid betzivtzuf kol. And therefore, you need birds for purification who constantly chatter in a chirping voice. Okay, so birds here represent, I think, the problem of speaking too much, or particularly of lashon hara. Right? But presumably birds aren't actually, when they're chirping to each other, they're not actually speaking badly. They're not engaged in lashon hara. They're just chattering too much. And so part of the message seems to be here, if you get tzara'at, it's because you used your speech wrong. Here's a reminder of birds who are always chattering. Stop chattering. Right? Speech can be destructive, so just kind of shut it down. And what's fascinating, and is really the direction that we want to go in here, is you have a different embrace of this idea of connecting lashon hara, the speech that is destructive, to tzara'at, that embraces the healing power of speech, as opposed to a message of like, oh, don't be like a bird, don't talk too much. Okay, so what we're aiming for here is, on the one hand, a realistic sense that our speech can destroy and not create. How do we zone in on? How do we kind of capture in our real world the ways that our words can be part of creating rather than destruction? So here we're going to go to our Hasidic text, the Sfat Emet, who is the second Rebbe of the Ger Hasidim. We have his teaching here from 1887. He lived mostly in the last half of the 19th century, a little bit into the 20th. And I titled this section, Reclaiming Our Speech. Right? How do we reclaim our speech, knowing that it can go wrong? How do we reclaim it towards healing, creation, rather than destruction? Okay. So he quotes a midrash that talks about the healing process for the leper, which we just saw. And then he brings a verse from Isaiah that is found in that midrash, Borei Niv Sifatayim, right? That refers to God as the creator of the fruit of the lips. And from that, he says, Torah is found within the soul of every Jew, but through sins and uttering Lashon Hara from one's mouth, the inner essence is closed off. So we all actually have a sort of well of Torah inside of us. When we open our mouths for Lashon Hara, that actually closes off our inner essence of Torah. And then he says, when one merits through repentance that open lips are created for them, this is the healing of Tzara'at. Kishezoche al yedei tshuva shenivra lo niv svatayim, zot hi refuat Tzara'at. Okay, so the healing of Tzara'at is not meant to shut down our lips. It's not like, you're a chattering bird, stop talking. It's meant to open our lips and to find that inner essence of Torah that Lashon Hara kind of obscured. It says, that's why there's a commandment to take birds that chatter. And he quotes Rashi. As Rashi writes, right, the reason you bring birds is because birds chatter. But for Rashi, it sounded like that was so you wouldn't chatter. And the Sfas Emes here goes in a different direction. He says, in order to show that a person needs to find anew the instrument of vocalization and speech. Shetzarich limtzo lo kli kol bidibur me chadash. So the process of healing from tzara'at, or healing from noticing that our speech has been destructive, is not to shut down our speech. It's to go through some sort of ritual. Here it's bringing these korbanot as birds, that renews the power of our own sense of speech. There's another time the Sfat Emet often comes back to a similar idea over multiple years. So this is a particularly evocative image that he has for this idea of kind of constant regenerative speech. He says, there's a rabbinic teaching that Tzara'at, that language, comes from the word bad or ra. Motzi ra, one who brings out bad. And he says, this means one can learn how to repair the soul from the body. Okay. He's going to get quasi-physiological here. He says, it's known that the central life force of a person is in the heart and the lungs. It's just drawing on physiological knowledge of his times. The blood found in the heart spreads throughout the limbs and returns to the heart. This is in fulfillment of the verse, a person's blood is his life. Ha'adam damo b'nafsho. Okay, great. That's how our heart works. It says, and the lungs is to remove air and to bring in air. So the lungs are kind of interfacing with our external world, bringing things in, taking things out. So that's kind of the body physiology is going to draw on as a sort of metaphor. Similarly with a person's soul, the central force of a Jewish person is the mouth. When we're interested in the soul, he says the central force is our mouth. Ikar kochan shel Yisrael bepeh. That is, to bring out words of Torah from the inner essence of a person. It's very beautiful, right? What our soul is trying to do is externalize, right? To share our inner essence through our speech in the form of words of Torah. And he quotes a different verse from Mishlei. They are life for those who bring them out with the mouth. Chaim him the motzeihem befeh. Okay. It says, and there's a rabbinic teaching that words that come out of the heart enter the heart. This means that every Torah speech act that a person brings out fittingly, right? If you can articulate words of Torah in a fitting way with all the heart, they enter into the heart. And one finds new meaning in them. So he's drawing on this image of like the heart is pumping blood throughout the body, and then the blood comes back into the heart. If we are using our mouth to create words of Torah that reflect our inner essence, then also those words come back in. And he says it's exactly like the image of blood going from the heart to all the limbs and returning to the heart. That's in accord with the verse, all rivers flow, the place the rivers flow, they return. Okay, so this is what I mean by there's this regenerative form that our speech, when it's our speech of Torah, our sort of speech that's actually reflecting our inner essence and not obscuring or destroying, that speech is going to constantly regenerate us, bring us more life. That's literally our speech that is recreating ourselves constantly. Okay. He says, a person's tongue and mouth join breath and spirit to a person's soul. Lashon v'peh ha'adam heim ha'mechabrin hevel v'ruach l'nefesh adam. Right. So here it almost seems like the mouth is actually kind of it's that gateway for bringing in almost like the oxygen for our soul, in the same way that our heart functions for the body. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Here he means our sort of spiritual life is in the power of our tongue. Okay.
What came to my mind immediately are the words before Amidah, Sifatai tivtach ufi yagiv tehilatecha, which seems to be completely derivative from this concept, this approach.
Okay, amazing. So that request that God open our mouth, sort of realizing that when our mouth is opened, it is kind of that opportunity for our sense of connection with the divine, God opening our mouths. Thank you.
I've struggled a lot with with my attempts to study Kabbalah, because I feel that it does two things for me. First of all, it draws my attention away from the real mitzvah-related work that needs to be done between people in this world. It lets you stay in your head a lot. And secondly, in the case of the tradition of Abu Lafia and others who meditate by using words and letters and syllables and sounds, I'm extremely concerned, as I am when I read languages I don't understand, that I'm bringing inadvertently things into this world that are not productive, are not life-affirming, because I don't know what I'm saying. So I wonder if you could react to maybe those two things.
Yeah, so I think ultimately what we see here is there's a real risk in the simple act of speaking, which we nonetheless need to do quite frequently. Certainly if we want, you know, things to happen in our real world that needs human connection and communication. But it's a risk, like we never know how it's going to go. So I think, you know, I did study Abraham Abu Lafia in a course in graduate school with Professor Elliot Wolfson. And it's not a practice that I have taken on, that sort of recitation of these syllables. But what I think why I wanted to start there is because it's such a concrete way of articulating the power of our speech. And I almost feel like the fact that the way it happens in that Kabbalistic practice is not about, it's pre-language. It's about syllables and nonsense in a way. But to me, what that in some ways reflects is like we feel disappointed and totally not confident in our own human language to access this kind of divine power that created the world in Bereishit, and we want to continue to create the world. It's a little bit, I think, of giving up on our human failures in trying to have speech that can do good work. But nonetheless, I think we can sort of see there a yearning for our language to be able to be extremely powerful. So yes, it's a bit of a retreat, and you might say kind of escapism from real problems that require like real words and real language and real communication to be effective. But I guess I don't feel so concerned about knowing that that pathway exists if we're kind of clear that it could ground a pathway that's a little more connected to our reality. And then, yeah, you know, we try and we fail, and it's really bad when we fail, but what are we going to do other than try again? So I think part of what I love about tying this power of speech to tzara'at, where tzara'at is like, the idea is you sort of saw everything go wrong, but we're not gonna stop trying. We're not gonna stop speaking. We're gonna try to figure out like what could it be that could cleanse our speech. And you think of like the idea of Torah. I don't read Torah narrowly. When the Sfas Emes says we all have our inner essence of Torah, can our speech reflect that, bring it out, and regenerate us? Right? What I see him trying to do there is to see Torah, and even like setting aside a lot of time to learn Torah in our life each day, it's like, can we access that Torah? And other places he also says prayer as a way of kind of giving us a little bit of muscle memory for our words to aspire towards a direction of growth, of honesty, of real connection. And it's so hard, and it almost requires ritual regeneration to get a little closer to using our speech in that way. But thank you for your question and concerns.
Yeah, I've always found the word tzaras fascinating. I love words. That it starts with tzar, which is short or narrow. It's like not just what you're saying, but your perspective on the person or the subject. And that gets counterbalanced by getting this, you're being alerted to the problem by getting this disease tzaras, which is a surface skin disease. It's like a mirror of your being too much on the surface and not getting the depth of the person or the subject that's before you.
Amazing. Okay, it's the disease of superficiality. It's the disease of surface superficiality. And yeah, and I think there, when you have this fast, Emma's talking about like, we have deep within us some inner essence that our words are meant to express, and ideally when we interact with people, help other people express it. That's very different than being on the surface. Okay, thank you. Nancy.
Hi, thank you. I guess I'm struggling a little bit with understanding and having it land, like when the language of like Torah speech reflecting our inner essence, what that means, how they interrelate. It's like just not landing for me at all.
Yeah. So, you know, I imagine it can land in a lot of different ways for a lot of different people, but this is where I meant from the beginning, like think of a moment where it felt like speech was doing really creative, connective work. So I think we could read this as sincerity. We could read it as just sometimes, I don't know if you felt this with a friend or a family member, or possibly sometimes when people might be speaking up in protest, or like there could be moments where it feels like, oh, speech actually did some real work to reflect like how I'm really feeling and not just something superficial. Or I was able to find the words to articulate, you know, a dream that I want to come into reality, and my speech is helping us get there. And I think sometimes people in community organizing feel this very strongly. So I think for different people, it can sort of take different forms. But I find like, yeah, I'm very aware of the times where speech, I think often speech feels sort of like neutral, actually. It's like sort of chatter. And then sometimes it can be incredibly destructive. And then sometimes you land on that more creative or connective ways of using our words. And I think that's what we're trying to zone in on and kind of amplify. I gave you a poem here called Blood, Milk, Ink that I wrote a number of years ago in the midst of nursing children. And it was a sort of a reflection on how it can be hard to write when you're like really, really busy and your body is working on creating a baby. And yet we sometimes want to be able to access that writing. So I'll just read this and we'll close with this. Can't not write anymore after a year of so much body, blood, and milk. I crave ink. Dark, bland odored, controllable, with a bouquet of unpredictable. So I offer that to us as a sort of kavana and intention for our own yearning for language and articulation to be a real, to be really connected with a real people and the work of real growth. And hope we all find the blessing of words that can create. Take care. Good to be with you all.